if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen,
country, and video games. BRB UK.
Worse teeth,
better accents.
Hello, hello, and indeed ahoy hoy, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 340 nizzle, a 9 thrizzle, 4 zizzle, 9 izzle of BRB UK. I've decided to be street this week because, surprise mechanics, that's going to be the phrase for this week, I've decided, and that should become abundantly clear for reasons that are best known because they're reasons. Anyway, I'm joined by Tim. Say hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
All right, sir. Yourself?
Yes, I am adequate. And another man who's adequate, it's Coleman. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I've never felt so adequate in my life.
I too am a solid 6.5 out of 10, I have to say, today.
Oh, man, that's an amazing game at IGN.
I know, right? Yeah, so that's another quiet week and easy we just had.
Yeah.
Although there was one or two things. Well, there was one thing. And EA was kind of involved.
Yes.
I'm not really surprised. Well, I'm not surprised. Well, that is the word of the day, as you'll know, because surprise mechanics.
Surprise.
Surprise.
So loot boxes, it turns out, are not loot boxes.
Nope.
They are surprise mechanics. They are the mechanics that generate and serve up the surprise, which your lizard brain so deeply covets.
Dan,
I'm
aware of the term surprise mechanics. It's one we used to use in IT for a bug that you can't get rid of. It's not a bug, it's a surprise mechanic.
Or a feature.
Or surprise feature as well. That's a good one. Why are they called surprise mechanics now?
Because bull. That is the only excuse you can give them.
But because EA. Basically, EA got called to have a chat with the UK Parliament's Digital Culture, Media and Sport Committee. I like to just swing by and say hello.
As you do.
And their VP of Legal and Government Affairs, Kerry Hopkins, termed purchases with a random result, i.e. loot boxes, as surprise mechanics. So basically saying, hey, look, it's all great, because kids love Kinder Surprise eggs or Hatchimals. And then she just thought, you know what? I've only got one of my feet in my mouth. I think I can do better. So after being quizzed about, you know, do you think this is ethical by one of the SNP MPs? She's like, you know what? I think the way that we've done this, I am paraphrasing slightly, and FIFA, of course, our big one, our FIFA Ultimate Team and our packs, is actually quite ethical and quite fun, quite enjoyable to people. And we disagree that there's evidence that shows it at least to gambling. Other newsflash, cigarette companies don't think cigarettes cause lung cancer. Instead, we think it's one of many other products that people enjoy in a healthy way, and they like the element of surprise when they've discovered they've just unknowingly spent £1,000 on meaningless shit.
Are we talking about FIFA or cigarettes?
Yeah, where are we going here?
Ultimately, you know, it's all meaningless in the grand scheme of the universe. Really, isn't it? You know, we're just a short footnote in the pantheon of history.
This was such an insult to the intelligence of gamers or anyone else that was watching. I don't know if you saw the actual clip of what they're doing. As she said, surprise mechanics, like, literally, he wrote off whatever, like, defense she was saying in that regard. Like, whatever you call them, do you regard them as ethical, basically, was the question. And this was her response.
Not only are they ethical, though, Tim, they're also part of a balanced breakfast.
If someone from EA, like, when they were doing, say, for instance, the Star Wars reveal, if they got up and said, good news, there are no surprise mechanics in this, no one in the whole of EA, as knowledge base of gamers that were there, no one would have had a clue what they were talking about. That is not an accepted phrase. That is something you've just literally pulled out of your arse to try and, like, cover your backs for an unethical practice that you have put into place for a number of years.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up this. It's a bit like a jack-in-a-box. It's a box with a surprise mechanic.
It's nonsense. Like, you literally, in the same thing I was just referencing, and for the sake of, you know, making that point there, you literally said there are no loot boxes in the game. You said that on stage.
Well, that's because technically they are bags of surprises.
But nowhere did they mention the word surprise mechanic, because there's not an accepted phrase in gaming, and that is, as I said, BS.
Well, I have to say, as soon as they said, "Oh, there won't be any loot boxes," people are like, "Yeah, right, yeah, we're going to remember this. We're just going to see what you say." Oh, what the heck? You're talking out of your ass. Good, marvelous.
Which is surprising, because no woman in the UK with the last name Hopkins has ever talked out their ass.
But look, I appreciate she's not in a particularly good job at the moment. There is literally no defense for the indefensible, and that's what she's having to come up with. And this is the type of BS that comes out when she's doing that.
Well, I don't feel at all sorry for her. I mean, saying that, she's got in a really difficult position, I don't give a shit. You don't exactly get conscripted to be the vice president of a multinational corporation. She full well knows what she's getting herself in for. She full well has written the spin that this nonsense is. And as a vice president of the company, she would have had the opportunity to disagree with this. And the fact, so she's complicit. Don't feel sorry for her.
But I'm just saying, in the position that she's in, her job, she has to come up with a defense for the indefensible. And this is the type of nonsense that comes out when you do it. And it doesn't stand up. Loads of people have picked apart the whole argument and everything else, the comparison to Kinder Eggs. Kinder Eggs are not a £50 purchase. You know what I mean? Like, to start with.
Also, after 1 year, you don't find that the toy in the Kinder Egg is now useless.
Yeah, exactly. Or that you've accidentally swallowed a bit of it and then 24 to 48 hours are going to shit out a pirate sword.
I mean, that is more likely with a Kinder Egg than an EA game. I'll give them that. That would be a surprise mechanic, swallowing a pirate sword.
It's funny because Kinder Eggs are illegal in the US because children might choke on them. And then over here, we'd like EA to choke on their surprise mechanics.
As I said, insulting gamers' intelligence.
Well, to be fair, they weren't the only people insulting gamers' intelligence this week, because Epic thought they'd have a crack as well. So now, the absolute nonsense of the Epic Game Store and them basically throwing money at everyone so they kind of corner the market for themselves. He's saying, hey, look, do you know what? We believe the lock-in effect of having a large library of games on the dominant storefront is more powerful than features. And essentially, it's the best thing for gaming. It benefits gamers.
I can see some relevance to that, but not in the way he said it. I do believe that competition stops an industry going stale, but at the same time, a lot of cases of the exclusives to the Epic Store, it's titles that were meant to be multi-platform, well, multi-service, I guess we call it.
Or platform agnostic, there we go.
Which then Epic just threw money at and goes, no, you release for us. You are platform exclusive to us.
It really bothers me the way they're trying to spin this. I mean, there's a lot of spin going on at the moment, let's face it.
I did notice that with the PC release, or, you know, the release on the Epic Store, at least, of Beyond Two Souls. I know it's not world's most interesting game, but they were advertising the fact, or promoting the fact, that there was an exclusive free demo that they had. That's a better approach, possibly, no? Like, I mean, I know it's a bit different when you're releasing a previously released game, or I'm not sure if it's just come to PC at the moment.
Yeah, it's just come to PC.
So is it exclusive? I don't know if the game's exclusive to Epic, but they were promoting the fact that there's a demo that's exclusive to the store, which, that, as I said, possibly a better way of doing it, no?
Well, yeah, that's what the 360 used to do. A lot of games that came out to the 360 and the PS3, the demo would only be available on the 360.
But I think the real issue is, though, when you start getting market fragmentation and, you know, I think for the PC, it's not as big an issue as, let's say, for consoles, and the way that exclusives used to work for consoles, where essentially you're locking a large segment of the potential game population out because they haven't got the right black piano gloss black box under their TV. And I think that is not great for consumers. But, you know, I mean, I will be amazed if what we're seeing Epic do at the moment isn't a loss leader of some variety. It's to get people in. And I don't think the Epic Store is going to be as generous in a year or 2 years' time in any shape or form.
Right. They have, I know Fortnite, and this is one other headline circulating this week, that Fortnite is apparently earning 38% less than it was last year or something.
Oh, cancel that.
Cancel that. We only made $380 billion last year.
Scrap it.
It's not worth it. I'm not getting out of bed for that.
No, but still saying, they have Fortnite money. Like, they have a lot of money to throw at this for a long time. And that's why I think they thought they could get into it, and this is obviously a longer sustainable thing, more than possibly even Fortnite is. So, like, it's a good thing to throw money at for a while, basically. I don't think they're going anywhere with it. I think it's something that, you know, it's going to have to get used to. Perhaps they can get a bit better at not being quite so abrasive in their approach. And as I said, like coming up with different ways of having some form of exclusivity, whether that's demos or DLC or other content or something, rather than the game. Maybe that doesn't rub up some people the wrong way as much. But the console market has always been fractured into actual consoles, and the PC market hasn't had that as a disadvantage, where that disadvantage coming into play, which might eventually work out better for PC gamers. But I can see how it would be annoying to have to sign into multiple profiles and have, you know, multiple things on the go. But isn't that the case with a lot of online services and other things these days anyway? So
yeah, that's what's going to happen with all the game passes. That's what's going to happen with all the streaming platforms.
Yep, absolutely. Everyone wants to have a bit of the pie, which means that the serving size of pie gets quite small, and no one likes little pies.
Capitalism, yay. Anti-consumerism, boo.
Boo. Boo. Boo. Surprise mechanics.
Surprise.
It's not a good surprise.
You know. So anyway, one surprise is there are no interesting points this week, according to the agenda.
No.
None.
They're making a Final Fantasy TV show, apparently. I didn't really want to talk about it because I don't know anything about modern Final Fantasy.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's not then. Tim, you got any rubbish you need to tell us about?
No. Let's get on with the games, as we've got plenty of games to talk about.
All righty. Well, as usual, we're going to get you to go first, because then me and Coleman can work out how much time we've got remaining.
5 minutes.
Well, I definitely want to mention last week and have played a bit more of since is Mini Mech Mayhem.
What is this Mini Mech Mayhem?
What is
Well, first of all, you'll love it, Dan, because it's a VR game. It's on
Hang
PSVR.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Yes.
Where's your podcaster talking about this?
Somewhat dormant at the moment. But it's all right, because now that two-thirds of the podcast own PSVR, we can talk about it a bit more. Hey.
Hey, sure.
You'll love it, Dan. Sure. You'll love it. Anyway, Mini Mech Mayhem. It's basically, made by Future Lab, who previously made Tiny Tracks. And, I've been messing around in VR for a bit. And this is a game that kind of shows a bit of maturity from a VR developer, which is something that's good to see. It's a kind of tabletop turn-based, programming of moves turn-based as well, kind of tabletop game where you've got a little robot buddy and you're kind of programming. You can either move or shoot on each turn. You've got like three turns to program per go, and then everyone programs those three moves, that all four players that are playing, up to four players, and then you kind of play out your moves and see if, you know, the people were where you expected them when you were trying to shoot them. And then there's kind of a few layers of complications they've put on there that add some real good strategic depth, basically. For instance, if you're just shooting and just going for a body shot type thing, that will shoot kind of in the first place. Basically, everything's ranked into... Well, let's explain it from movement. That's easier to explain, and I'll come back to that. If you're moving, which happens before shooting, which is another reason to explain it first, if someone is moving one square, they will move before a person that's moving two squares, and you can move up to six squares at once. And so if someone's moving, it programs in a move of six, and someone programs in a move of three, the three will go ahead of the six. But then they'll all sort of play out, and shooting happens in a similar way. Body shot is just a one, and that will happen like instantly, but after a one movement, basically. So, but otherwise, if someone was doing a larger movement, all moves happen first and then shooting happens, but the one shot would happen before a two or a three. A two generally hits an arm shot, which will shoot someone's aim off. A three will hit a leg shot, which will rotate someone's movement. You can go for a headshot for a six. Now that will always go last, but it will also knock your opponent back a square as well. You can also push opponents around when you're moving.
Oh, I have a question.
Yes.
So essentially, you have to try and anticipate where everyone's going to be at the end of the turn, so you can then do the pew pew bang bangs.
Yeah. Well, you kind of have to either anticipate where they'll you know where they start, and it's a case of, well, is that person going to move, or are they going to stay still and shoot, or are they going to get pushed around by that other person, and then where will they be? And so sometimes it's very complicated to work out. There's also, as I said, if I was shooting someone's arm and that spins their aim would be off for their next shot, basically. So it, you know what I mean, like it's all. There's a chance to do that, and then there's also a level of kind of like super move type things that you have to build up a power for that are called intercepts, and they generally completely mess around with stuff. Like you can, some of them are like simple ones that require less power to do, will just like nudge someone or spin someone round or spin a shot round, and those you can do after the moves have been programmed as things are actually happening, so you can actually like interrupt what's going on and do those. Likewise, you can do a gun jam to stop someone firing at you, and you can do things on yourself as well as opponents. So if an opponent had messed you up and it had spun you round, you could use one of your intercepts to turn yourself back and get yourself back on course, kind of thing. And yeah, like it works really well. The other thing, there's a kind of victory coin that you have to try and collect, and if you are the person that ends their go on that square, on the last of the three moves, ending your go on that square, then you get the victory coin and you get 1 point. You get 3 points you win. You also get a victory point for eliminating one of your opponents. They generally have 3 health each, so you have to like wear them down with 3 shots. But knocking back or pushing something, you can push them into a hazard and they can fall through the table, and that kills them instantly, basically.
Damn you, gravity!
So yeah, it's often about like, okay, well, he's going to try and end his go on that victory coin, so I know he's going to go for that, so I'll end my go to make sure I'm shooting in the direction of the hazard behind him so that he'll fall into the hazard rather than getting the victory coin, and I get the point rather than he does, basically. He or she. But it works really well. The only other sort of mechanic that's in there is a kind of a power ball on the table that you can collect or shoot to get more power. And there's a power steal that you can do for one of the intercepts that will steal power off other players and stuff as well. Yeah, like the tutorial for it is quite long. Like it's got a tutorial for like 10 of the different mechanics in the game. But then it's also got a 3 little puzzles that are based on that mechanic, basically. So the first one's generally quite easy, only takes a few minutes, but then the second and more likely the third can take some time sometimes. So like that took me like a couple of hours and I haven't even finished all of those yet. But I've played a few of the games. I've lost most of them so far. But generally, yeah, it's really enjoyable. If you win, you get to a little fist bump your little robot buddy. And there's like loads of other funny little mechanics in the game. Like there's literally a button just to make your robot dance. You can emote and stuff to the other players, and you've also got like an avatar that kind of sits around the table, and you can put silly hats and stuff on that as well, but you can wave to people and give them thumbs up it's a game that you can clearly see is made by a VR developer that's experimented in a few things, found something, and has really kind of brought it up to a nice good level. And it's a fun game. It's one of those things that it's not entirely necessary that it's in VR, but it shows like how much fun you can have with just a simple board game in VR, and that having that presence. And I've only played it with bots so far, but I imagine having it with other people and stuff, and the fun I've had in just like Star Trek and stuff, I imagine a similar thing with this when you're sitting around with your mates and all just, you know, giving each other the shooty bang bangs and just generally cursing each other out when they've taken you out on the board and stuff. But yeah, like it's a really good little tactical board game and works really well. And as I said, it possibly doesn't have to be in VR, but it does add something to it that it is. Also just referencing the fact that I think Catan VR snuck out on the PSVR, the PSN store this week as well. But yeah, just another board game that that's a more classic board game that's taken into this. But Mini Mech Mayhem is kind of a bit of its own thing and knows what it's doing, and get lots of unlocks for your little robot buddy and yourself, that other silly hats you can put on, and different ways you can make your mech.
I mean, I know this is a PSVR exclusive, but really, is there anything that VR is key to in this game? Do you reckon you might see it on... not? Because it sounds like a lot of fun, but do you think you might see it in on non-VR?
They could convert the basic board game, but it would lose the essence of a lot of the stuff around it that adds to it. As I said, it shows what fun you could just have with a simple board game, but it is also a board game that is made with VR in mind. As I said, like fist bumping your little robot buddy, like being able to look around the table and kind of see what's going on a bit. And obviously you could replicate that in different ways in a game engine, but yeah, like it would rob a bit of the fun. The avatars and like waving each other and doing things is silly, but that works in VR. And that's why I'm saying this shows signs of a developer that has, you know, experimented in VR and has looked at what works in VR and put it together in a good package kind of thing. And that's why this works well, basically. So, yeah, as I said, you could play the game without, and I think it would be a fun game to play anyway, but it adds another level of depth, literally, to the game that it is, basically.
Oh, really? We're going there with that pun? It's very accommodating of you. There's another eye pun.
Good. But yeah, Mini Mech Mayhem is a definite recommend. So yeah. And Coleman, if you pick it up, we can play some multipass.
I am looking at this for $15.99, and this looks like everything I hate in a video game. So no thank you.
Really?
No. I can't see any use of the VR. Like you've said, you can gesture, you can fist bump your little buddy, but I can't see any point in playing this in VR for myself. Playing a tabletop game with voice chat is more that kind of speed, I think. I don't see an element in the VR that I actually gain anything for. I much prefer like a, you know, a Superheart, a Batman, a Creed, you know, something more physical in the VR space.
In that case, as I showed off to a friend this week or last week, but yeah, Rush, if you haven't picked that up yet,
the running game.
Definitely do that. No, it's the wingsuit game.
Oh God, that was my first VR game was a wingsuit game, and I almost threw up.
Excellent.
Yeah, within seconds.
Maybe with your motion sickness, that's not the best recommendation, but hey.
It was quite funny. Oculus DK1, and the guy put it, as he was putting it on my head, I went, I'm quite susceptible to motion sickness. Is that something I should worry about?
And he took it straight back off again. Anyway, this one's not for you.
No, he said, oh, no, you'll be absolutely fine. Just if you start getting a little bit uncomfortable, put your hand up. And I was in it for a good 9 seconds. I went, hand up, help. Gotta be sick.
do you want to do another one of your games then, Tim?
Well, I could team up with Coleman.
Crash team up.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Do a bit of Crash Team Racing.
We're going to talk about the greatest release on the PlayStation 4 since Mini Mech Mayhem.
Right, I have to say, I still get flashbacks. I love Mario Kart, don't get me wrong.
Yep.
Who doesn't?
Things that want to be Mario Kart just have a way of really annoying me. And what was that Mod Racers? Mod Racers.
Mod Nation Racers.
Mod Nation Racers I actually really loved.
I detested that game. Other games that Tim loves and other people hate include Rise and also the Ouya. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not a game.
Good. But yeah, like this is a game that I kind of got swept up in the fuss for. I was like, oh, right, this is... I never really played Crash, as I think I mentioned last week. I don't really have an affinity with the series. I don't have anything against it. Just never really played the platforming things. So never really cared for the racing thing. And I don't think I had a PS2 at the time when it was out. But yeah, like everyone was going mad for it. I'm like, well, I like kart racers. I don't have one on my PS4. Okay, I'll buy this, basically. And it was £35, which I was like, okay. But yeah, like, I do have some buyer's remorse, I have to say. Like, as much as everyone goes on about it, I'm like, oh, okay, no, not really for me. I don't know if it didn't help the fact that we were all playing in multiplayer for most of the evening.
Well, we did some single player that one seemed to like.
Yeah. One of the things I've heard, and I know you're going to think, oh, it's Dan being PC Master Race here. I hear that it's limited to 30 frames a second.
I don't think that really made a difference. Specifically, it was the controls. It was just the game, you know. I didn't grow up. I mean, I played Crash Bandicoot 1 and 2 because those were 5 available games in my rental store. The Crash Team Racing was never something I got into. I remember trying it at a friend's house really quick, but I wasn't really into Mario Kart back then either, so I had no comparison to make. And I wasn't really interested in this until probably a few weeks prior. People started really, really hyping up this game, and it was previewing well, and it was reviewing well, and then it came out, and then Tim ended up picking it up. I was like, oh, I can have a little try before, because I was going to pick it up the same day as well. And I'm glad I held out, because Tim's just saved me 35
You've just
quid.
Saved yourself 40 quid.
35.
35,
yeah,
okay.
I think it's safe to say the four of us were playing it, and like we were like, oh, none of us really like...
None of us like Crash Team Racing. Go figure.
Oh. All right,
but we
then.
Stuck with it because one of our party seems to always win at Mario Kart, and he did suggest maybe we put the game away and just let him win at Mario Kart all the time, which also isn't very fun. So, but yeah, we stuck with Crash Team Racing because it kind of gave us an even playing field, and it just, I don't know. Did anyone in our group actually come in first ever?
No, I don't think we did in all the races we did. I mean, we were like, you know, possibly concentrating overly on hitting each other and drinking more than we were on driving, but hey, like, yeah, I don't know, I wasn't that impressed with the range of weaponry. I didn't like the basic controls of the driving, like that for me, particularly the drifting mechanic just was like, whoa, it just feels horrible compared to Mario Kart. And I don't know, I'm just overly used to Mario Kart, I guess. But
with the drifting in this game, you're meant to, as you turn, you're meant to either hit the left bumper or the right button in what way you are turning, and then a little meter builds up really, really quickly, and then you've got to quickly hit the other bumper to then do your boost. And it's so cumbersome, you're constantly driving into walls.
Oh, so is it a bit like kind of an active reload type thing they were going for?
Yes, but it's so difficult to do as you're turning, skidding, and navigating incredibly tight corners.
And it just felt, I think years of Mario Kart training just made that feel unnatural.
Years of Mario Kart boot camp.
Well, literally, I've been playing like Mario Kart for like, what, 20 years or more?
Don't say that. That makes me feel very
maybe.
Old.
But yeah, so I don't know. Like, I've played, like, as I said, I really like Mod Nation Racers, and I've played other kart races and not had as much issue with it. Like, even Little Big Planet Karting, I thought was better than this, basically. Like,
that was the same engine as Mod Nation Racers, anyway.
Well, there you go. So, but. Yeah, but neither of those were, you know. What was the other one? F1 Race Stars was a little kind of F1.
That was rubbish, but John loved it.
Yeah, that was weird, but that controlled better than this,
yeah.
I think. Anyway.
Well, but, yeah, even like a couple of years ago when we were playing the version of Sonic Team Racing that was apparently overhauled and delayed and stuff before the version that came out a couple of months ago, that played better than this.
Yeah, exactly. At least that had like the teamwork mechanic and something interesting going on. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, if I could take my time back again, I would not buy that, and I would buy Team Sonic.
Oh. Tim, all I can say, if that is the only regret you have when you're shuffling your Mortal Kombat game,
I envy you.
Yeah, it's a pity. I mean, as you start off, you've only got a few characters to play with, and then there's a bunch of skins and other characters and stuff that are all locked behind progressing the game, but all the progress has to be done in single player, but then the single player is not very fun. Like, we have more entertainment in the multiplayer just because you could be a dick to each other and swear at each other while you're playing the game. That's all lost when you're playing on your own, I find.
I don't know. It's the type of game that I would have sat around with mates and passed the pad in the past, possibly, but yeah, I would have hoped for a better game to do it with.
This is literally advertised to teenage Coleman before he got a Nintendo 64 and just had a PlayStation. I would have played some of this.
Oh dear.
And then put it away and gone back to Evil Zone. So that's a recommend.
If you literally have nothing else to play and want to regret it on your deathbed.
If you love Crash Team Racing and you used to play it and you've got some nostalgia for the game, then maybe this is for you. But yeah, if you're a newcomer and you love like other kart games, I can't really recommend this one to you at all. Just a steal at £35.
I may play more, but I may not enjoy it that much when I do.
I may play more, but then again, I may not have a brain aneurysm. So, hey.
So you got one more game to talk about, Tim.
Yeah.
So Heart, you played Heartbreak on the Switch, and this is a re-release of a kind of turn-based XCOM-like thing from a couple of years, I think it was released on PC a couple of years ago, I think.
Can neither confirm nor deny that, but I would expect so. And that, yeah, that, you know, there's a lot of things that are being ported to Switch
either
these days.
Or Eurogamer got a really early copy in November 2015.
But yeah, like, it's right. I mentioned it last week because it was on sale. I believe it's no longer on sale. But just to kind of round out my thoughts on it and stuff like that, it's cowboy based, but also has a bit of a kind of occult kind of background to it, and generally all the stories kind of mess around in some kind of supernatural shenanigans as well. Basically, you take control of like various characters in different like sort of story chunks, and you follow their kind of story. For example, you follow a dad and his son to start with, and then in the next story you follow the son and the wife. Without spoilers, the dad goes off somewhere else at the end of the story, kind of thing, and it carries on. And then there's other side stories that are kind of developed from characters that you meet along the way in some cases, or characters that other characters interact with, but then the main story kind of continues. But then it also kind of jumps back and gives you a prequel story to the dad story as well, basically. Each scenario and each story is set up slightly differently, but they basically have a similar kind of map system. And you're going around the map system either ticking off things from a list or searching for various items, or just... generally, there's some MacGuffin excuse for why you're going around, and then there's kind of text-based decisions to make on a lot of things, and a bit of an economy, and the whole trading screen got a little bit to get used to, but kind of works well. You can literally just buy items with cash, but you can also trade items of value for those items that you want as well, basically. In each scenario, you kind of end up with a different bit of money and a different sort of set of skills and slightly different people. The basic combat is a bit like XCOM in the fact, it's a isometric map, and you're moving around the map in a turn-based kind of fashion. Generally, you don't have a kind of Overwatch ability like you do in a lot of these sort of games, but your enemies often do. You can't get too close to them, otherwise you'll trigger them and they'll shoot you, basically. And it's reasonably tough. Like, it's not entirely unforgiving, but if someone like gets up behind you and you don't have cover, then you can generally often get shot. But there's a kind of luck-based system that adds to your defense. If someone's shooting at you and your luck is kind of full, it'll just minus a bit from your luck rather than hitting you.
I've heard this is a little bit different to say how, like, it's not just like a static percentage chance of whether or not you hit or miss. It's kind of relative to the other character, and you use luck points, and if you run out of luck points, you're out of luck.
Say for instance, there's myself and an enemy in a bit of a shootout. They're like well protected behind a window, and I'm outside a saloon or whatever behind some reasonable cover, and we're shooting each other. That will mean that basically you'll see the percentage, but the percentage will be quite low in some cases, and the amount of damage will be quite low as well. Whereas if I, while in that shootout, if I get someone to come up round the side of the saloon on a window that's an angle to it, a right angle to him, a flanking maneuver type thing, then I will then get a shot what might be 5 or 6 damage, which might be enough to kill a smaller enemy or a mid-sized enemy type thing, but with a say shotgun from up close or something, you get like 5 damage from that sort of angle. But there is also, how much luck they have, and that comes into play. Like, cover and luck work in a kind of slightly... You can't always guarantee that you'll hit someone. Say, for instance, in the first instance before the flanking maneuver when you're both in reasonable cover, if you shoot at someone, you might not actually do the damage that they say, but the percentage that it gives you to hit will come off as the number that comes off their total amount of luck. So say they start with 100 luck and I had 43% chance to hit them. Instead of hitting them, it will take off 43% from their luck, basically. So, yeah, and you've got to kind of balance how much luck you have and how easy that is to dodge. But then you get, like, skills that come into play in the game as well. So you've got a range of playing cards. And say you'll have an ace of spades that will give you a certain skill.
The ace of spades! Sorry, I had to do that.
Yeah, and a king of spades again. You know, but as you unlock,
but don't
you
forget the Joker, cards, Timothy. Don't forget the Joker.
Well, there is some Jokers that are quite handy. But as you go through the game, you'll unlock more cards, and it'll get more likely that you'll be able to produce a good hand. For the start, you might only have, like, say, a pair, but it actually takes that, like, you get a skill from the individual card and a bonus from the individual card, but you get a bonus from the hand that you have as well. So if you only have a pair, like two cards the same, I think it gives you like +4 movement or something like that. Whereas if you had a royal flush, it will give you like more health or higher defense. And yeah, like generally the better the hand, the better the thing, but not always the case. But yeah, like that's a really interesting mechanic, works really well. It also allows you to give your people certain different skills. Some of them be something like dodge, which is really handy, where you can literally dodge all shots fired at you for 2 rounds, which is really quite good. And other stuff, like I mentioned, some of the more occult stuff. There's stuff that where you'll heal when you're not in the shadows, or you can regain health when you stand on a dead body and feast on it and stuff like that. So there's some dark stuff in there along with the kind of regular cowboy stuff as well. And it's a bit fantastical in the kind of range of weaponries and what's going on and the kind of story as well. So yeah, it all kind of works quite nicely and quite well. Like the world feels quite well realized. The stories like have to be engaging to kind of keep you in. Maybe that they don't float everyone's boat, but I've kind of kept quite engaged by the writing and the story within it. And yeah, I really quite like the combat. So it does, you know, the kind of XCOM type thing a bit differently, and differently enough to feel like its own thing. Yeah, I've seen kind of reviews more in the kind of 7 out of 10 range, and I have to say that a bit higher for me, but that's because it ticks the right boxes for me. Particularly, I quite like the world being a bit different to some of the places. Like I like a sci-fi based kind of setting or something like that a bit more, and you tend to get a lot of fantasy settings. I haven't seen a lot of occult cowboy settings for these type of games, and yeah, it just works quite nicely within that sort of setting. And as I said, it allows them to be a bit fantastical with the weaponry and a few other things when you're not taking the time period entirely accurately or seriously anyway, sort of thing.
To be fair, Tim, that is the first time I've ever heard the word occult and cowboy next to each other in a sentence, so that really gives you an idea how niche this setting is.
I keep on saying occult. Maybe more supernatural is a kind of more covering all bases type thing. But yeah, there's very much like one character that you're an inquisitor going around and claiming to be working for the church, but you're actually in league with the devil and stuff like that. So, you know what I mean? Like, and doing his bidding and trying to kill as many people in the land and stuff like that. Yeah, and like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and like, but I don't know. As I said, I've found it. It's quite dark and macabre, but I've found it quite interesting and engaging. And yeah, really quite like the combat. And yeah, there's not so much of an upgrade system. It's more of the kind of cards and stuff kind of thing. But that I quite like as well. And you know, it's poker, so it kind of fits the cowboy setting. And I kind of like poker, so hey, all good. But yeah, as I said, it definitely ticks the right boxes for me. It's a slightly harder to recommend when it's just come off of on sale, but if it's on sale again and you know you like that type of thing, then it's definitely one worth having a look at, possibly.
Good. All right, I'm going to lead with observation on the PC. After ragging on the Epic Store, this is an Epic Store exclusive as far as I can work out.
Is this you are a computer watching your space crew?
Yes.
Cool.
So basically, this is quite... It's definitely got big echoes of 2001 Space Odyssey, the Kubrick film. So the basic setup
Not the Spielberg one?
No, not the Spielberg one, nor the Michael Bay one. That would be amazing. Can you imagine how many lens flares it would be if Michael Bay did a version of 2001?
I believe you're thinking of J.J. Abrams there, Dan.
So oh, you are
explosions
right.
for Michael yeah. Bay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, that's very right. I'm a bad pop reference person.
Observations then.
Yes, that.
Yes.
Observation.
Observation.
So the way the game starts is that you are the AI of this space station. Yes, you are the AI.
Oh, lovely.
Which has mysteriously gone offline and the whole station is kind of rebooting, and you've got to work out what the heck's going on. So there's only one crew member left, and everyone else has disappeared. So it's very much working out what the heck is going on. Now, I can't go into too much without spoilers, but this is a game where I think kind of the atmosphere it kind of sets up for itself at the beginning is really, really good. And its delivery of some aspects of that is absolutely spot on. Where kind of initially as the AI, you're quite constrained to just flitting around individual cameras. And it's as more and more of the station gets turned back on again, you can start inhabiting these spheres to basically... It's a bit like the character out of Portal 2. You get basically turned into him and you're the best at space and stuff. So you gradually gain more mobility and ability to transverse and interact with different bits of the station, which kind of feels like you very much feel like a part of the station coming back to life. But there is something ulterior going on, which you gradually unpick. So it's a fairly linear story, I would say. I think there is only really one path you can go down. There's no real branching storyline in this, which... probably is to its narrative strength. I mean, it's certainly a game that you really only need to play through the once. It kind of tries to introduce some puzzle mechanics throughout. So it isn't just click this, go here, do this, do that. There are a couple of, like, you've got to find ways to decode something in various bits of files. But the puzzles are nowhere near as complicated as I was expecting. I mean, I was expecting witness levels of difficulty, but they really are... I mean, you could brute force most of the puzzles, and I was expecting, frankly, a little more from that. The story, when it gets going, is generally pretty good, and the atmosphere created by the way the kind of the cinematography of the game is, and the fact that they use kind of slightly fuzzy, out-of-focus cameras because the station's dumb fucked up... probably helps that kind of feeling of, you know, claustrophobia and being alone and, you know, as an AI, do you actually have a personality or not? So it's all kind of helps the delivery of the story without a shadow of a doubt. However, one of the things this game needed to absolutely nail, bearing in mind that you're kind of dealing pretty much with one human character throughout the vast majority of the game, and a lot of that is kind of like close-up shots as she's speaking to camera, the facial animation needed to be absolutely bang on,
and it's
quite jarring in
I'd
places.
Argue more the acting would have to be in place along with the lip syncing.
But I mean, to be fair, the voice acting isn't too bad, but I would say for me, a couple of times, the quality of the animation in the game fell so far short, it actually kind of broke the immersion of it, which is a real shame, because it's so close to being there. And they actually gave themselves some wiggle room by the fact that everything's a bit out of focus and a bit fuzzy. That can hide a multitude of sins, but the facial animation is proper uncanny valley. Which is a real shame, and it unfortunately slightly breaks the game.
Oh. I've heard a lot of people talk about this in like really high praise. Like a load of people seem to be onto it like, you have to play this game and I'm not going to tell you anything about it.
I wouldn't want to tell you anything because there are some really cool twists along the way.
Tell us the ending.
Tell us all the twists
in the ending.
No.
He wants me to spoil it for him. It's that baby from Teletubbies at the centre.
But I have a question.
Baby son, yes.
Is it narratively worth the jarring things that you had? Did you still recommend it in terms of playing through it for the story?
Yeah, I would say it spins a good yarn. The game starts, which I think I blitzed through it in about 6 hours. And, you know, it was a fun ride while it lasted. You know, I think more the style of it is memorable rather than it being an interesting kind of narrative dissection of what it means to be an AI and the frailty of humanity. I don't think it quite hits its own lofty goals in respect of that, but it's a fun, you know, it would be a good popcorn movie, put it that way. I mean, I think it's not a bad game. I think it's a pretty good game, but just the presentation just falls slightly short, and sadly, the quality of that presentation, to me anyway, is so core to this game being believable and being completely absorbing that because of that, it sadly doesn't quite hit the lofty goals it could have attained. So that's where I'm come from on that, which I could tell is the story you wanted to hear, Tim, because you sound thrilled with my review of that.
Yeah, I'm just it was a game I've been on the fence about possibly picking up, but yeah.
I mean, if it comes up on sale,
yeah,
worth checking out. And much so, I hate to encourage you, actually, that being VR could be quite interesting. Although there is something to be said that the slightly clunky security camera control that you need, but yes, I won't say anymore because I'll spoil something, and I don't want to do that.
You don't need VR. You just need to sit in a box with a little slit in the for your eyes, and then I'll just keep pushing my face up to it, going, "Hello, Dan, can you help me solve a puzzle?"
Or basically, that's a situation that I like to call Saturday.
You sit there for Sudoku.
Hello, I have had puzzle again, Dr. Dan. Can I put you in your puzzle box?
You'll do Sudoku.
Okay, I have a 12, a 17, and a 32. Am I doing Sudoku right?
That's a crossword.
Colman. Yeah. Right, next up, you've got a choice. What do you want? You've got three things I could talk about, and I could talk...
Cadence of Hyrule, because it's newer.
Cadence of Hyrule. Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Cadence of Hyrule. This game's chuffing great. The end.
Damn. Hooray!
Yeah. No, it's Cadence of Hyrule, if you've been disconnected from the internet for about the past year and a half, is the spiritual successor to the kind of critically acclaimed and, you know, very, just generally very successful and very awesome Cryptal and Necrodancer, which is a twist on roguelikes and rhythm-based games. And basically, you have to trawl around dungeons to the mitre of a beat and have lots of fun doing so. And Cadence of Hyrule is Nintendo's kind of adaption of that. It is done by the same people who did the original Cryptal and Necrodancer, but replaces the female protagonist from that with either Link or Zelda. So early on in the game, you as the previous game's protagonist get dropped into Hyrule. You don't know what the heck's going on, and you've basically got to recruit the help of either Zelda or Link. And stylistically, this game is just fantastic. If you're a fan of Link to the Past, which is the best Zelda game ever, as we all know, you'll feel right at home. This game is put together with so much love, care, attention to detail. The soundtrack is phenomenal, and it just feels really great to be kind of navigating around the levels and fighting battles to, you know, some really kind of great versions of classic Zelda songs. And It's surprisingly hard. It's not as hard as Critical and Necrodancer, but it's hard enough. And the game just has you going around Hyrule, the usual kind of collecting items to help you unlock the big dungeons. All of the enemies have got very specific move and attack patterns and cues that you need to learn, and you've got to manage kind of finite resources in your inventory as you go as well. So, you know, there's a lot to take in with this game. You can make it easier so there's no penalty for missing a beat of the beat in the music, but you can obviously, you know, make it as Cryptid and Necrodancer as you like. It's a great game, truly great. Love it, and it's such a great fit for the handheld mode. And I actually think it works better in handheld mode than it does on a telly, because the immediacy you get of reacting to the beat in the device that you're holding straight in front of your face somehow feels a bit more connected than, you know, on a telly that's some distance away on a wireless pad. I think really handheld mode is the way to play this, but obviously you've got to play with headphones or have the speakers up. So if it's not a game you can play on mute sat on the tube, for example. So but it's a corking game. It's an absolutely corking game.
Can I just ask, because I know you get to play as both Link and Zelda, and then also Cadence. How does that work? Is it you just pick a character to play as, or do they swap out? Or
yeah, certainly as far as I've got, it's so Cadence kind of cheat. There's an introductory dungeon where you learn the very basic mechanics, like, hey, look, this guy puts his arms up before he jumps towards you. Maybe I should remember that. And she gets to the end of the dungeon, and there's essentially like two portals she can jump down. One where there's a sleeping Link and there's a sleeping Zelda, and you've got to either jump on the sleeping Link or the sleeping Zelda. That makes it sound worse than it actually is.
Yeah, that sounds weird.
Jump on a sleeping Zelda.
How'd you make that weird?
Jumping on a sleeping, here's my Triforce. Anyway, yes, it's a great game. You should play it. If you have a Switch, you need to play this. If you don't have a Switch and you haven't got the original Cryptid and Necrodancer, go and buy that, because it's on the Steam sale at the moment.
I'm very tempted, but as you know, I refuse to use my wired headphones on the Switch, so it's not suitable until I can find a suitable replacement for Bluetooth headphones.
And I have no rhythm and not much love for Zelda, so...
How much is the game, just by interest?
I believe it's 24 quid.
24, okay.
Which is a little more expensive than I was expecting, but it is superbly done.
Hmm.
It's superb.
I guess you got to get your money, and then you got to pay for the license too. So
yeah, I know, right?
The Nintendo licenses don't come cheap.
Yes. So yeah, but great stuff. If you can check it out, I'm sure it will be on towards the end of the year, be on sales, and you know, if you see it at a price that tickles your fancy, or indeed any other bit of your personage, you should pick it up.
I know the original Cryptid the Necrodancer was recently dropped to like £4 on most platforms. So, and that does tend to go on offer quite a lot. So if you wanted to try the first one before you get to that, then yeah, that's usually on offer to go pick up.
Yeah, and like I said, it's on sale on the Steam store at the moment. So I think Fiverr is about what you can get it on PC for as well.
Okay.
So if you want to, if it's something that's probably the way to go. If you wonder if it's going to be something you like. And if you hate fun like Timothy and you don't want to play anything with Link or Zelda in it, that might be the preferable way forward.
Good.
All of those things.
All of those things.
So, Coal Man.
Yes.
My Friend Pedro and Bananas. Discuss.
Okay. My Friend Pedro, we spoke about this a while ago. They did a reveal trailer that me and Tim got very excited about. I've since gone to go play a Eurogamer and still got very excited about it. And now it is finally out. And it is already one of the front runners for my game of the year, which is funny after we literally last week decided our front runner the game of the year so far. And then the next week it changes. My Friend Pedro,
fickle man, Coal Man.
I was very excited about this game just by seeing the initial trailer. And I thought, if this is as fun as it looks, then I'm going to love this game. And I am happy to report it is as fun as it looks.
So for those of you who have only seen My Friend Pedro and the picture of a smiley banana.
Yes.
Talk me through what kind of game this is.
So, my friend Pedro, this is actually a remake, not a lot of people know. This was a Flash game released by Adult Swim about 5 or 6 years ago, I think. Which you probably never played because around about that time, Google Chrome stopped allowing you to use Flash Player, so you've probably never seen this game at all. It's now been remade and re-released on, or I think it's on all platforms, PC, Switch, PS4, and Xbox One, I think. And this is essentially, if you like the idea of a game where you are John Wick, where you are Neo, where you know where you do crazy flippity-doos and shoot guns.
Crazy what now?
Flippity-doos.
Because I hear that's what the kids call them. Marvelous.
That's what the kids call them these days. And if you like the idea of being this sort of acrobatic action hero badass and do all these really cool, crazy tricks with your guns, then this is going to be a game for you. And I've got a suspicion this is going to be a game for a lot of people because it is very, very fun. And also, like, before I get into the meat of this game, it's just $17.99, and that is a steal, I think, for this game. So the kind of meat of the game itself is you are...
Or the banana of the game, if you will.
The fruit of this game is...
Hey, there we go.
You wake up, you're a random dude, you've got a mask on, you don't know who you are, you don't seem to talk or have a memory, and then a banana appears in front of you.
Do you know what? I do in that particular, in that exact situation? Do you know what I do?
Eat the banana.
You know, befriend a banana.
Okay, well, I assume that Banana's name is Pedro. He hasn't told me yet, but going by the game title, I'll assume that's what he's called.
Right, okay, good.
So there's a floating banana who is talking to you, and he's like, wow, you've woken up here. You've been pretty done over. We've got to get out of here. And along the way...
So basically, it's a bit like Destiny, but with a banana instead of a ghost.
Yeah, kind of. If the ghost was telling you to kill people, that's more like it.
That's pretty much what the ghosts do, no?
Kill him. I don't like him.
Well, he's pretty much like, well, this guy's in your way. Better kill him. Better burn the house down and all this kind of stuff.
No, so, oh, you killed that guy's son. Better kill him as well then, really.
So what this then lays into is a 2.5D side-scrolling game where you do some mild platform... Well, it's not platforming in the sense of jump over thing, don't fall in the lava. It's the sense of you will want to jump up and down walls to... Just go bananas and shoot people.
More fun. Go bananas.
Go bananas. So you've got invincible pistols, which you can then, which you are dual wielding. You can, not only fire at one person, but if you hold down, I believe it's the left bumper, and then you can use one arm to lock on one person, and then the right stick to just freely move and aim at another person, which allows you to do split shooting, which is very, very fun. And also you can do all these cool twirls and things and put yourself in bullet time by clicking in the left stick and just making everything look really cool. And then the game kind of turns into John Wick's Tony Hawk's Pro Skater because it's then all about building up combos for these cool tricks that you're doing and involving the environment in some way. There are red barrels in this game. If you shoot a red barrel,
Yay!
It doesn't explode. It will be on its side. It will roll down. You can use it to jump off and stuff, but you can also roll it down a hatch and kill people below using the barrel. You can take a skateboard and you can start riding your skateboard down the level and start shooting people along the way. You can kick it into someone's face and then jump in the air and land back on it if you're skilled enough. There's levels where there will be a basketball net where you could kill someone and lob them into the basketball net. It's all down to the base of your skills. A thing that we saw in the initial launch video, I think it was you take a saucepan and throw it in the air and you start shooting up at the saucepan and all the bullets start ricocheting off and killing everyone around. It takes lots of inspiration from lots of different action films and does them very, very well. It's a clearly very Devolver Digital game because it's just absolutely madcap and really wonderful. I genuinely recommend picking this game up because it's just so, so much fun.
I played it at Res and I was really looking forward to it. I liked the look of it. Really wasn't sure about the controls. I don't know if it's just I didn't get that much time with it. I only spent about sort of 10 minutes playing it or so, whatever. But is that something that gets easier over time? Is it better? Like, does it introduce things a bit more gradually and kind of build things up? Or
I wasn't sure after my res sesh the first time as well. And it turned out that what happened is the demo I was playing, I missed all the tutorial and stuff because it wasn't reset correctly or something, and I just missed out a big section of it. The controls, yeah, they are fiddly to get to handle with initially, but I found probably less than 10 minutes, actually. I jumped on it pretty quickly on how to do all the locking and the spinning and stuff, but they are still quite cumbersome and fiddly. But after a while, they do just come to you naturally. You know, once you figured out how to slow down time, how to spin in midair and jump off a wall and then throw something at someone while shooting something out, it just comes to you. It's the game. It's the Tony Hawk trick. You know, the first time you play Tony Hawk, you know, you do a manual off a flipping thing and you start doing some, and then you just go splat on the floor. You know, yeah, it's. And after a while, you're just pulling off these ridiculous stunts that no one can actually do in real life because you don't actually chain 200 tricks in a row.
Because, I mean, I must have been, I thought the trailers didn't necessarily do it justice from the way you're describing it.
Really?
Mm.
Okay. I see. I thought they did. I don't know. Maybe it's just it's because of the style of the game being the 2.5D style of title, and it's not, you know, it's not majorly appealing to look at, but appealing to look at. They do throw in some colors and psychedelic bits, but it's mostly quite grim to look at.
I thought you're gonna slip up on that one.
Hey, referencing jokes. That's what people like. I don't know. I saw this game. I fell in love with this game. I played this game. I fell in even more love with this game. Now I have this game. I'm gonna marry this game. This game is
okay.
This game is utterly brilliant, and I just love that I'm on a killing spree because a talking banana told me to be.
You want to be friends with benefits with Pedro, basically.
Of course. Why not?
Wow.
Go get My Name is Pedro. It's a really, really good game.
I might be playing the Flash game as we speak.
Oh, okay. I'm a little bit sad that now I'm just sort of getting into this game. Super Mario Maker 2 is out so soon because it means I probably won't come back to this for a little while because I'll be knee deep in that game trying to make all the crazy levels and stuff, but I need to come back to it because it's so good.
Do you know what this game looks like it needs?
Mm-hmm.
A level editor.
That would be fun.
Because there isn't a level editor at the moment, is my understanding.
Yes. This could do with a level editor, I think. You could, yeah, crazy levels to make for your friends. Much like Super Mario Maker.
Pedro Maker. Except Pedro there's Maker. Less guns in Super Mario. I hear they're not a big fan of the old shooting people in the face.
You could play the Mario Rabbids game.
Right. My friend Pedro. Psychopathic bananas.
Pretend you're John Wick influenced by a banana.
Banana.
No.
You're breathtaking.
Are we done?
Yeah.
We are done.
Yeah.
This game's fun.
Stop playing.
All right. Sorry. So Cobb said, this is the thing you can play on Flash. I then promptly went, that sounds like something I can look up on the internet. I promptly looked it up on the internet and I promptly started playing it. And I'm enjoying it very, very much.
I found a version of my favourite Atari 2600 game that I can play on Flash the other day.
Right. What is your favourite Atari 2600 game?
Sequest.
Really?
Lesser known. It's the one I played the most on my console back in the day.
Once found a browser version of my favourite Commodore Plus/4 game, Treasure Island. Got really excited. Seems to play at what I can only describe as 2,000 times the speed of the actual game. Really hard to play.
Yeah, that. Really? Sequest? Mind you, they were all kind of the same, weren't they? Because it's very much a lot like combat, some bits of it, but if my memories are correct.
It's kind of, you know, single screen, very arcadey feel, like got like the patterns of enemies got harder as you went, but yeah. Really good. I played it the other day. I was like, oh my god, I still like this game. I still like a remake of this game, but maybe I don't need it now that I've got that.
And if young kids want to see how bloody lucky you are with your high defs, go and have a look at some screenshots of this.
Any talking bananas?
No, sadly.
No talking bananas.
Only the ones you've got about your person.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tuesday is Tuesday, Tim. Remind us why that is the case.
Tuesday is indeed a Tuesday, and if you don't know, each and every Tuesday we do an event called Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Dalston. And each and every week we have a different feature game, and if you play that feature game that evening, you have a chance of winning a copy of the game at the end of the evening.
Tell me more, Timothy.
Well, we have been playing Cops and Robbers throughout June, and as it goes over into July, We're doing kind of exploratory games for this month. But also, this one has some thievery in it as we're crossing over. This is a good bridging point, basically. We're playing a game called Monkey Temple. It's a kind of simple-to-play party game for up to 8 people. Apparently really good. Quick to play. Looks really good fun. And good one to come along and get involved in. Anyone that plays it on the evening has a chance to win a copy and a free prize draw at the end of the night. There are more details up on the top left-hand corner of bigredbarrel.com, or you can join over the 1,750-plus people that have joined our Meetup group by searching for Tabletop Tuesday.
Is that 1,751? Because that's technically over.
No, I think last time 1,768
or something. Wow, Mr. Popular.
There you go.
How big is this venue?
And last week we ran out of space. This week wasn't so bad, but it was still a nice, good crowd and a few nice people in that we hadn't seen for a while.
That sounded creepy. A few lovely people.
Lovely people.
I got to stand near them.
I like to touch their face.
Okay, this is why we don't allow you to
I like to caress the people.
Don't like to scare the people.
Have
like
you met my banana?
And give them free games.
Have you met my banana? Have you met my banana? Have you met my banana?
Sorry. Stop saying that.
can we say no?
Have you met? Never mind. Anyway, so loading bar, Dalston, Tuesdays, you, board games, occasionally Coleman, me with a restraining order. That's what the general thing is, right?
Yes.
Good. Marvellous. So that is Tabletop Tuesday, 2nd of July, in the loading bar in Dalston. Be there or be somewhere else.
Tewkesbury.
What?
Tewkesbury.
Tewkesbury. Splendid. So there we go. So that is Tabletop Tuesday. It shall be the awesomes. Shout-outs. We don't appear to have any.
Keep forgetting. Sorry.
But we won't. We'll stop forgetting you.
We'll do them next week.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
We will stop forgetting you, if that makes any sense. We will remember to not forget. We will remember to remember. Remember. Yes, that's what we'll do.
Question of the week. What surprise is better than surprise mechanics?
Syphilis.
Like, you cannot come up with an answer that's not better than that.
Chlamydia.
All answers accepted as yes.
Chlamydia. Cake is always a good surprise.
Surprise cake.
Explosive diarrhea, I think, is a better surprise myself.
Well, yes.
Because that is a surprise. That is a surprise mechanic.
Yes.
Also, a bloke called David just shows up around your house, who is in fact a mechanic who surprises you by being a mechanic.
That would be a surprise mechanic.
That is a surprise mechanic.
Still better than EA surprise mechanics, though. Because that didn't cost me money and may provide a source of amusement and a funny story to tell people.
Exactly. This bloke called Dave came around to start fixing my car. I don't know where he came from.
Randomly came around my house, started fixing stuff. Weird.
Yes. Right. We should go now because Coleman sounds like he's had enough of this nonsense.
I'm really tired today. I'm very sorry. It's been a very hard week.
Coleman needs to lie down. He's had a very hard week. He needs a bath. You need to make yourself a bubble bath, mate. You need to chill out, put some Kenny G on. You'll have a whale of a time.
Oh, Kenny G. That's a good shout.
Anyway, so that Coleman can do that, we're going to go. So thank you ever so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate you downloading us each and every week, if indeed you still are. But if you've listened to this and mildly enjoyed it, why don't you head on over to www.bigredbarrel.com or twitter.com/bigredbarrel or facebook.com/bigredbarrel and say hello to us there. Or indeed, come say hello on our Discord. There's a link on bigredbarrel.com and we do games and stuff in there. That's your lot. I'm going to go off and spend some more time with my banana.
You know that sounds as dodgy as you think it sounds, but worse, yeah?
Really? That's amazing. I'm going to smother my banana in Tara Masalata. So there we go. That is a taste sensation. Someone needs to try and let me know.
That was not a good taste sensation.
Right, we're going to go. So I have been Dan.
I might have been disgusted by Dan.
Yeah, you have been.
I'm sorry. I'm just sorry. I'm sorry.
Good. Well.
I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry, listeners.
Back in your corner, Coleman.
Okay.
Okay. Facing the wall. Face the wall. Face the wall, Coleman.
Dan.
Bad Coleman, what?
I've got a word search. Could you help me?
Let me just climb in my box. One sec. Right, while we're doing that, we're gonna release you back to the wild, dear listeners. So thank you ever so much for listening. And until next time, dear listeners, toodle-bye.
Your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.